Well, Lawrence, thank you for coming in. It's really good to meet you. Just for the sake of the listener to these podcasts, can you start off by introducing yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Lawrence Sibanda, of African descent. Both my parents are Zimbabwean, so I am Zimbabwean, but born and partially raised in Johannesburg, South Africa as well. But I was raised in between both countries. So before I actually migrated to join my parents, because they moved here. So okay. My whole family moved here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you were born in which year?
1993.
Yeah. I'm not going to do the maths, but
yeah,
that's
a year
recently.
Before Nelson Mandela came out of prison.
Right, okay. So cast your mind back for me and tell me something of the very earliest memory that you have been back in Africa.
I haven't been asked that question before, actually. Well, I was pretty much a grandmother's kind of baby, to be honest with you, because my mom was quite young when I was born, and I have an older sister who's 29 this week, actually. We're both kind of basically grew up mainly watched by our grandparents, because my mom used to travel quite a lot. That's how she ended up like in South Africa and all these other places, because she used to travel working and stuff like that. And I just remember like being, you know, around my grandmother and having this surrounding around me with people of all types of backgrounds and social classes and just basically this diversity in the community, and obviously the nice weather, the the food, everything. I remember really. So that's what I really kind of remember from being like a child. It was just all innocent around me, but at that time, obviously, you don't really see the you don't really see it for what it is. You just see it, and it's just normal to you, sort of thing. If that makes sense. So,
So what was the community? You grew up in a village, a town, a city?
Well, okay, let me start from the beginning. For me, basically, being in Johannesburg as a child. That's a big city. So we're talking bigger than London, quite a very big, busy place. Life is so fast. Everything's happening at once. And as a child, that's where I sort of kind of started off, basically. And I had friends who were sort of Jewish. Actually, my best friend was half Jewish, half Hindu, which I don't know how that happened, but he was his mom was Indian, his dad was a Jew, and his name was Aniruddha. And basically, we had friends who were Dutch, friends who were South Africans as well, you know, Afrikaner friends, Zulu friends, also. So it was so diverse around me that it was normal for me, really, at that time. But at this time, we're talking at a time when post-apartheid, which is a very sensitive time at that time, you know, it was very, the division was real. You know, we were not, you know, obviously certain people not being allowed in certain places and stuff like that, but it was coming up to the point where it was coming to an end, but it always, things like that are going to take a long time to sort of be resolved, basically, amongst people themselves, and to actually accept that this is the end of that era and stuff. So as a child, I didn't really see it, you know. When I think of it now as an adult, and I'm like, damn, yeah, it was a bit mad. But so
give us some examples of the sort of things you were experiencing.
Stuff like police brutality and stuff like that was happening as well, and racism, obviously, and classism quite a lot. But on the upside, it was a lot of positives as well, because at that point, I mean, South Africa was one of the wealthiest nations in Africa. And so that meant there were sort of decent education and stuff like that for people. But it was accessing that stuff that was sort of difficult. But then as I grew up, obviously, it became easier, better and better. And we were able to go to school with people from all different types of racial backgrounds and ethnic backgrounds. And then obviously my Zimbabwean side, I grew up there as well, because like I said, my mom used to travel a lot. So we used to have to stay with my grandparents.
Yeah.
And that side of it was different because Zimbabwe became independent back in 1980. So by the time I was born, they were already in a different place in the society altogether. But obviously, we all know the Robert Mugabe story. But yeah, it was a different kind of struggle altogether. It was very different, actually. I don't even know how to explain it in words. Zimbabwe was more, it's a lot more laid back, a lot more relaxed. It's not as fast city life as Johannesburg is and South Africa is. It's more laid back. I don't know how to actually put it into words. It's just a different lifestyle altogether, you know. But yeah, for it's just, in a way, I'm grateful for those two very different upbringings I had, because it put me in a place where I can actually be in any situation or any kind of environment and be able to adapt, because going from one extreme to the other, back and forth all the time, it was sort of like different, because I go to one place and I would be surrounded by many Europeans, you know, from Australians, like I said, to Dutch people, to Afrikaners, to black people, to all sorts of Indians and all kinds of people. And then go over to where I grew up in Zimbabwe, where I wasn't surrounded by that at all. It was mainly just my own people. And that was about it in the environment where I was. So it was two different places, but, you know, sort of similar struggle, but different places.
Did you enjoy one more than the other?
I can't say that. No, I think I actually, because there was always something to learn from both of them. There was always something to learn. I think Zimbabwe taught me to be a survivor, that survival spirit, because going through the whole era, the early days of it first switched to from Rhodesia to Zimbabwe, it became a place where, I hate to say it, but the regime that Robert Mugabe put in place kind of became a thing where, I don't like to get political, to be honest, but I'm trying to put it to perspective for you, yeah, so you understand it. Yeah. The Robert Mugabe regime was more of an anti-British, anti-European, anti-West sort of society. That's the sort of thing he was sort of instilling in people. So it was a different lifestyle altogether, because we didn't see too much of the European influence by the time my generation got there, because a lot of that was eliminated, whereas my parents would have done, because it was a lot more integrated when they was kids. Whereas the other South African side, it gave me that skill to be able to adapt to different people and different communities and cultures and all that sort of stuff, which has became more useful for me living in Hull now, because we are diverse. We are at this point we do have quite a lot of different cultures and all people from all sorts of places living here, which is basically what I really saw when I was in South Africa. So I can't really say I prefer one over the other. I think they both kind of taught me different sides of what life could be, and you need something to be learned from that and use it in the future. Sort of
yes,
thing.
Yeah. So yeah. What artistic or cultural influences had an impact on you as a very young man?
Yeah, artistic. Are you speaking in the sense of
music, in the arts, or whatever?
Okay. Well, as a child, actually, me and my sister used to be very, very much into dance. That's what we sort of both used to do when we was kids. So we used to do a lot of, me and my sister, we're like 6 years apart in age. So she was a lot older than me when I was a kid, but I was a lot more out there, and I used to do quite a lot of stuff with some of the youth dance groups and stuff like that, you know, which used to combine like African traditional dance sort of styles and stuff with contemporary styles. So I grew up doing stuff like that with I once was doing stuff with a group called New Age, and another one that was called Fresh Mix, which was sort of like more contemporary and stuff. So I kind of did a bit of that, and then my sister used to do stuff as well, and she used to do actual live theater stuff when she was at high school. So in terms of arts, we both did that. And then obviously as I grew up a bit more, I kind of started getting into other things. I moved away from the dance a little bit and I got into other things. Actually, I got more into sport as I got older. But then that's when I kind of had meningitis, and it resulted in eyesight loss and other problems like hearing loss and other severe problems, really, that come with being having meningitis, basically. So that meant that I couldn't do sports that I wanted to do and stuff anymore the way how I wanted to do it, because I'm very competitive. If I can't do something at the highest level, I won't do it. So then that's when I kind of discovered the music, because when I was recovering from it, at that point, I think I was here, actually. Yeah, I was here by that point. I was in Hull. And
well, let's talk about that journey then, from Africa to Hull.
Yeah, sure.
How did that come about?
My mother, again, she was always traveling, like I mentioned earlier. So she migrated here. I think it was in 2002 or somewhere like that, three. She moved here. And
was that through work or through education?
She was working at the time. I mean, she studied here later on, but she was working at the time. She was basically just migrating as a refugee and seeking for greener pastures, I guess. I mean, she did have a good job back then at the time and stuff. And but obviously, where we come from, there's certain things that you, certain privileges you get here that you don't get where we come from. And I think for her, she was foreseeing the future sort of thing. She wanted us to have good education. She wanted us to have decent access to, you know, health services and stuff like that. And not that we didn't have access to that, but it cost a lot of money compared to being here, if that makes sense. So she kind of worked at it and worked at it. And actually, she used to work for a medical aid company back home called Discovery Health. People don't have medical aids in the UK, but because we have the NHS. But basically, a medical aid is something that, for people that don't know, it's something that you, it's sort of like
an insurance.
An insurance, yeah, that you pay a certain amount of money towards, you know, every month in case you get ill or you need a funeral paid for, or anybody in your family gets ill, that money would pay those bills because it is expensive. So that's what my mom used to do at the time. And she worked her way up that rank, and from where she used to be as a child to where she was as an adult, she worked her way up into that place, and then obviously ended up here.
So how old were you, roughly 10 years
at that time, when my mom left, you mean?
When you moved to the UK?
I was around 13. I was around 13,
right? So just very about. Very aware of culture.
I was very, very aware.
So what was it like to be told that you were going to be moving from Africa to the UK?
It was hard because at that age, you know what it's like. You've got friends, you're used to your own community. The majority of my family are not here anyway. My dad is here, my mom is here, and a few of my uncles and aunties and cousins and stuff. But the majority, like about 80% of my family, they're all back there. So it was hard in that sense, because it's like I have to separate myself from everything that I've gotten used to. You know, imagine it's like being... It's like driving on the, you know, right-hand side all your life, keep left, and then suddenly they changed everything on the roads. Nope, we keep right now. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like now you got to learn how to adapt to the whole system over again. So I wasn't sure how it was going to be like school-wise. I wasn't sure what the language... Well, obviously, I always spoke English, but it's different. You know, the dialect is different. I'm coming to a city called Hull. I mean, because the thing is, most people, right, in Africa, if you speak of Britain or England, they instantly think of London, right? Everybody thinks it's going to look like London. So my mom is like, no, you're not going to London, you're going to Hull. I'm like, Hull? What is Hull? Where is that? You know what I mean? I've never heard of it. I've heard of Manchester because of football, Manchester United.
Yes.
I've heard of Liverpool because of football. I've never heard of Hull. What is Hull? You know, so I moved to Hull and I get here and I didn't know what to expect. I really didn't know what to expect. It was just like...
Why Hull in particular then?
I don't know. That's something to ask my mom, I guess. I found her here and she was, you know, I think she had relatives. Okay, my mom's relatives, like my mom's cousins and stuff who came here before her happened to live in Brough, and one lived in South Cave. So when she moved here, that's the only kind of closest family that she had really in this region. I guess she kind of stuck here and she just stayed here, I guess. She never really relocated, although those relatives that she had here, they've all moved now to elsewhere. But she just stayed here, I guess, and that was that, really.
So for you as a 12, 13-year-old, you found it really hard, a real wrench to be taken from Africa to come to the UK. Was there any excitement mixed in with that too, though?
Yeah, it was, because obviously you're reuniting with your mum full-time, because honestly, growing up, I'd never actually lived fully with my mum since I was like 5 or something, because of her having to be away all the time working and stuff. And I understood, because if she hadn't done what she had to do, we would be in a very bad place. So she had to do what she had to do at that time. So the excitement for me mainly came from reuniting with my mother and actually living with her full time. And it was like, yeah, actually, this is going to be for the first time in like 7, 8 years, I'm going to be able to fully, you know, even though we used to see her like every, you know, end of school term, and I'll go and see her and stay with her and stuff like that. But it was just not the same as living full time. So there was that excitement from that kind of aspect of it. But the other excitement was, like I said, growing up, I was always around different places, different cultures. The excitement as well came from actually being in a new place. I wanted to know what it felt like to be in an English school, you know, in a school here in Hull. I wanted to know what it was like to be in school, and I wanted to know what it was like to go outside and mingle. But at the same time, for me, it was different because I had just come off that meningitis that I mentioned earlier. So I was fighting a totally different fight from everybody else. I was fighting a fight of, obviously, I lost my eyesight at that point fully, meaning I'm having to learn a whole new lot of things, you know, from Braille to technology to how to actually adapt to that situation. As well as adapting to a new country. So, which is a very, very tough battle. It's an uphill battle, but you have to have kind of tough skin to pull through it. So, and that's why I said earlier, I feel like moving out, living between Zimbabwe and Johannesburg, Blawaya, Zimbabwe and Johannesburg, South Africa, it kind of prepared me mentally for the change of sort of culture side of it. Because that wasn't the hardest part for me when I got here. Because I can just adapt. You know, you can take me to Australia right now and I'll fit in within the first month. Because I'm just used to it. You know, I'm not one of those that would be like, oh, I'm so used to having this. Or I'm so, you know, the water's different. You know, I take whatever's given. And, you know, I roll with the punches sort of kind of person.
Subject matters at college and other areas of life. Where do you feel you've flourished?
I would say it's probably the music, because like I said, when I first came out of the meningitis state of mind, it was just sort of like that 1 year after it happened, it was like a window where it's like a transition, like, where do I go now? Where do I go now? I can't play football like I used to. I can't do certain things like I used to. So what's next now? And one thing I always used to do was listen to music. I always used to listen to music. I used to have, my mom bought me this 5-disc changer. I don't know if the kids might not even know what a CD is nowadays, but I used to have a 5-disc changer. What, a CD? Yeah, but I used to have like the stereo with like 5 CDs, and that was real cool at that time.
So CDs, what were the 5 CDs most regularly played? Some idea of the genre that you're interested in?
Obviously hip hop, because that was a culture that I grew up part of. So, and that was the poetic side of it and the actual lyricism where it actually used to speak to me. And then I used to listen to that. I used to listen to what we call Kwaito music, which is our music from where I'm from.
Okay.
It's a similar genre to hip hop, but it's more dance influenced, so it's more like Kwaito. How do you explain Kwaito? It's urban. That's how I can put it. It's urban. You know, it's the equivalent to hip hop, to garage in the UK, to sort of garage music. It's the equivalent to sort of reggae, dancehall sort of thing in Jamaica. It's that sort of thing. It's urban. It's our version of like urban music. And I used to listen to that as well. And then I would like to listen to stuff like, because my mom used to play stuff like Celine Dion and all that stuff, like the old Toni Braxton's.
I understand that a little bit better.
I used to listen to the, you know, Celine Dion's, the Toni Braxton's, and as far as even some of the Stevie Wonder stuff and anything. Gregory Isaacs. Anything. Tell me, I've always had a broad ear when it comes to music. So I like the slow stuff. I like the urban stuff. I like all sorts. So that's what I used to listen to anyway. And then fast forward, just listening to it led to the point where I felt, hold on, I can do this. I think I can do it. You know what I'm saying? So I always had a rhythm for music because of, you know, coming up from dance and stuff like that. So yeah, and then I discovered that actually I could write lyrics and I could rap. So I was like, okay, let me try this rap thing. So when I started school, I kind of started doing piano lessons, just to learn how to sort of like put together chords and stuff like that. I'm not that great at it, but I'm not that great at playing piano, but I can put together chords. I can write, definitely. Then I did drumming lessons as well later on and stuff like that. And I was doing pretty good in that. And then I think I got like an A or something like that in my GCSEs in music. Yeah, it was an A. I can't remember now. Yeah, it was an A or B, one of the two, in music. And then I went on to do music technology at Hull College, which is sort of like the more studio tech side of stuff of music. But that's the academic side of it. But outside of the academic side of it, I've always been doing music on my own, you know, of my own strength, basically trying to pursue a career in the music industry. It's been tough, but I started off, you know, doing gigs like at Adelphi, just open mic stuff. Like this is like maybe back in 2008 with a group called Project Phoenix. They were quite popular at the time. And another group called The Gang, and who were quite popular in Hull, actually.
How would you describe Hull's music scene then? I went to a few open mic nights. I'm a big fan of going to the Sesh on a Tuesday night. And
yeah.
Humber Street Sesh Festival. I love the music at Freedom Festival and the like.
But yeah.
How would you describe the music scene in Hull?
I think it's healthy to a certain extent. I feel like is there talent in Hull? Absolutely. I do think there's talent in Hull. From where I started to now, I can see the change in, you know, like I said, the cultural influence like that is being injected into Hull over the years. I can see it in the music as well. On the other hand, I still feel like there's room for I still feel like there's room for improvement in the sense of exposure. It's amazing that we have stuff like Springboard Festival and like you said, Humber Street, Freedom Fest. There's quite a lot of other festivals that go on in Hull. But I would like to see a bit more diversity in what actually happens in the festivals, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I would like to see more reggae artists up there. I would like to see more urban artists up there. I would like to see more pop artists up there. We've got a hell lot of rock bands in Hull.
We certainly have. Yeah.
We have a hell lot. And quite a few of them do get showcasing and stuff like that. And they do get to the forefront. But I feel like one side the seesaw is not balancing quite well. You know, there's too much exposure. I think it's because, how can I say this without sounding...
you say it. We might have to add, but you say it.
basically, okay, what I'm trying to say is, There's obviously, when it comes to, you know, the corporate side of stuff, musically, obviously the festivals and all that stuff, that's not down to the musicians. That's down to higher powers. what happens is down to higher powers. And I feel like some people at the top are not really aware of what the kids want to hear in 2016 and what is actually cool for the kids in 2016. It's no longer to year 2000s when Kings of Leon was, you know, everywhere and Kaiser Chiefs and Snow Patrol, whatever. It's not that anymore. You know, you've got your Rihannas, you've got your Beyoncés now, you've got your whatever else is going on. You know what I'm saying? So we'd like to see the reflection of that culture in the community in Hull, as well as the other stuff as well. I'm not saying eliminate it. I'm saying the balance needs to be right. Because if you go anywhere else, Leeds, Manchester, wherever else, there's a balance. So, yeah.
I think you're probably right. You're certainly right about the number of rock bands.
Yeah, there's a lot in
that particular genre. Is very
yeah. I mean, it's because rock is probably one of the biggest genres of all time. So, understandably so. But I want to see a rock band as well as a jazz band, as well as a blues band, as well as a hip hop band, as well as an R&B band, reggae band. So I don't want to just go to 10 festivals and see the same band headline all festivals. It doesn't make sense. You know, you're not going to go to Glastonbury and see the same headline every year now, are you? Same thing with V Festival. Same thing with a lot of other festivals. Even Leeds Carnival, you're not going to see the same stuff all these. You're going to see a broader spectrum of things. And I would like to see that in Hull a little bit because we are diverse. There is a lot of us from different places. There's Vietnamese, there's Brazilians, there's Malaysians, there's Africans, there's Europeans. I would like to see that reflection in, you know, of our community in the music as well.
What would you like Hull to learn of your African culture? Because you know, there's fashion, there's food.
Yeah, that's a hard question. You know, African. See, when you say African, that is an umbrella term because.
Well, of course, yeah.
You know.
I'm learning this.
Right? Africa is such a diverse place. Like, where I'm from is totally different from what Nigeria, Ghana, and Kenya. And we're all very different. You know, I've had people ask me a question like, so what language do you speak in Africa? I'm like, where in Africa? Because in each country, it's like, for example, a country like Nigeria, where they have hundreds of tribes within that one country. It's like, you know, what do you mean? So, and each of those tribes, I think in an African, this is the interesting part about Africa. Each tribe has its own sort of identity and its own tradition and its own ways of doing things. So coming from where I come from, my mom is one thing. My dad is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Two totally different things. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So already, straight away, I have those two in me. And then I grew up around other people who have other backgrounds as well. So when I say, so when you ask me the question, what would I like Hull to learn from my African heritage? Exactly that is what I would like Hull to learn, to actually bring diversity a bit more to the front. And actually, okay, there is diversity, but to actually, I don't know if acceptance is the right word, maybe not, I don't know, but what I'm trying to say, to actually to celebrate it a bit more, maybe that's a better word.
What about you yourself, personally? You know, you've got the ability, a young fella as you are, to say, thanks, to look 30 years ahead. Where's, you know,
I try.
What are your ambitions? Where are you going to be in couple of decades time?
Well, obviously the music is my passion. You know, I would like to become a successful music artist. I've reached sort of certain heights, but it's hard because, again, the city that I live in hasn't fully embraced the culture that I'm a part of, which is hip-hop culture, yet. The kids have, but the people up there that are pushing the media and stuff, they need to also get with the program to help people like myself, because there's a lot of us. So the music is my first thing, really. You know, I've done shows with JLS when they were still going. I've done shows with a few US artists. I've done stuff that's had hundreds of thousands of hits on YouTube and stuff like that. So I've been quite lucky, really, in that sense, music wise. But I'd like to see that grow a bit more and hopefully hit number one at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side of it, I've always been interested in entrepreneurial stuff. So I would like to keep building my events management business and stuff like that, expanding to doing more things. Obviously, like I said, we're doing the Afrobeats thing right now. We also do the Full Flavor stuff that we do with my partner that I work with a lot, David Okwesia.
Yeah.
We do the, you know, I mean, he's been going for a long time. He's been going way before I was Full Flavor. They were doing Grassroots Festival and Full Flavor Festival and all that stuff. Hazel Road Carnival. He's done a lot of stuff. But he sort of kind of mentored me into it, basically, when I was kind of young and stuff. And I'd like to see that side of it grow, obviously, growing to doing bigger gigs, bigger festivals. And I'm doing stuff across Yorkshire, basically. So that side of it as well. So at the moment, yeah, those are my main focuses, really, for now. Probably change, but I might add to it to that resume. But yeah,
well, let's hope the time is right for to be accomplished.
Yeah, 2017. I think that will be quite a healthy year for many people, because already I'm starting to see a lot of people coming up with ideas and of how to showcase the culture that we have, which I feel like it should have really been happening all along anyway, but it doesn't matter. It's never too late. I'm starting to see certain festivals pop up. HU1 is one of them that happened this year. Where is it Zebedizia? Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, they did it there, which was quite good because we need something like that, and other things going on. So I'm starting to see fashion stuff going on. Bespoke boutiques, they're doing quite a lot of stuff. I know Gareth very well. He's a great guy. They got stuff going on, and so it's great to see stuff happening. You know, I think it's a great time. It's an exciting time for me personally as a young person looking into the future, I think.
Lawrence, it's been absolutely wonderful for you to come in and chat with us.
Oh, thank you very
much. Share something of your journey. And we'll continue watching it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lawrence. Thank you.
Take care.